podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's John Gibbons and Neil Atkinson, and we're introducing this special weekend of a guest. This is where we normally do the weekend, but we're putting on something else slightly different. It's A Moment in Time, which was a series we are revisiting. We've done three of them now. This is the fourth, and we're really excited that we've pulled this together. And Neil, we're pleased with it. We're pleased how it's turned out. So we're pleased we get to do things like this with our time.
Yeah, I think it's a really important thing to be able to do. This one is about Juventus 05, everything that went on around it, its resonance and so on and so forth. I've listened to it and I think it's absolutely excellent, and people should strap themselves in for a fascinating reflection of what was, in so many different ways, a really, really strange game of football, and one which was obviously unprecedented since 85, but also marked the sort of return to Liverpool in terms of the Champions League big time as well. And I think both of those sorts of aspects of it play in, and it is a good thing to be able to do, John, and I think it's something that, you know, we're able to do because we've got the full team with us at the Anfield Wrap, and we're able to do as well because people subscribe.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you are a subscriber, you're obviously getting this for free, but do know that it's because of your subscription that we're able to do that. It's been a lot of work to pull this together, and there are a lot of work to pull together. I do want to give a shout out to Josh and embarrass him a little bit at this stage, because Moments in Time originally was sort of my baby, if you like, my idea and something I wanted to do. And so Josh was involved from day one, and I asked Josh to get involved sort of with me, and we've always done them together. But gradually, I would say the scales have tipped from more me to about even by the time we did 2001 FA Cup, about even, and then it's very much Josh doing most of the heavy lifting this time. It was him who listened back to everything and has pulled this all together, and he's done a brilliant job. So big up Josh Sexton on that, but all the interviews are great, all the people who helped us are really good as well, and we are really pleased. So should we let them have a listen now? This is Torn Moments in Time, a series of audio documentaries in which we bring you eyewitness accounts of key moments in Liverpool Football Club's history. This time we go back to April 2005, when Liverpool took on Juventus in a Champions League quarter-final first leg at Anfield. This was the first time the Reds had faced Juve since the Heysel Stadium disaster 20 years previously on May 29, 1985. Writer Tony Evans was in Belgium as a fan on that fateful day.
There's a lazy assumption about, you know, sort of the creation of the Premier League, that the watershed was Hillsborough and everything changed after Hillsborough. The reality is everything started to shift. The momentum towards the Premier League was in the year post-Heysel, so it started moving that way. So that was, in many ways, the point where football had to change and move in a different direction or die. And so, you know, sort of all the consequences after that were not directly a result of it, but it was the moment the seeds of the new age were thrown in the wake of the disaster and the tragedy of Heysel. And so there was loads of stuff to think about. And it's like, you know, the first thing, when the draw was made, I was sitting in the office and, you know, sort of the boss came out and said, right, you've got to write a piece about your personal experiences in Brussels that day. And I was like, it was the sort of last thing I wanted to do, but I spent the next sort of week or two thinking about myself, my behaviour, the behaviour of the people around me, the things I'd seen, and I thought, you know what, to a great extent, I haven't been honest with, you know, sort of with the world about the way we were that day, and while no one set out to hurt anyone, and no one deliberately did anything that they thought would lead to death, we were certainly a big link in the causal chain that led to people dying. You know, there have been people who'd really tried to reach out to Juventus and to create a momentum in Liverpool fans to accept the reality of Heysel. You know, John Mahan, you know, has tried really hard. But I think to a certain extent, I hadn't really come to terms with it. And especially post-Hillsborough, you're sort of consumed with your own tragedy, your own disaster, and it was time to reassess a lot of that stuff. And then there was a football match.
Juventus fans Luca Guarino and Elio Salerno weren't born in 1985, but are more than aware of the impact that night has had on the club to this day.
Always in all the games, the crew was seeing a chance for the 39 people in order to remember them. Although the society was not very involved in these situations. For example, every year that is remembered Hillsborough, you have a very huge celebration. I don't know if it's the right term in English, but I think you understand what I mean. While here, there's nothing like that. So it's quite strange because we always keep remembering them, but there is nothing as what you do.
And, you know, it probably doesn't help with things that Liverpool have experienced as well in terms of opposition clubs that aren't involved, that perhaps don't respect it either, and perhaps especially in Italy, it's been done on a number of occasions where, you know, opposition teams have reminded Juve fans of what happened that day, and it's just disgusting behaviour, really. And I don't think it really helps the situation, which is a shame, because you'd like to get to the point where, yes, it'll always be recognised as a tragedy, but it happened and it just needs to be respected and looked in that way by everyone.
The Anfield Rap's Andy Heaton recalls talk of a friendly between the two sides which never came to fruition.
What I do know is, in the years, I think it must have been, even from the late 90s, there was talk of friendly. A few times they kept cropping up, in America specifically, either late 90s or early 2000s, and never really got off the ground because of, well, I can only presume, messages back from Italy that it wouldn't be a good idea, or it's not something they'd be willing to engage in. And I can kind of understand that. Why should they be part of this? I don't know, almost charade. I wouldn't say charade, maybe the wrong word, but why should they have to be party to us trying to make things better? Surely it's just up to us to try and make things better.
Despite resentment between supporters, the relationship between the two clubs was amicable. Rick Parry was Liverpool's chief executive back in 2005.
I mean, interestingly, the two clubs, and this is credit to Peter Robinson, that the two clubs had always maintained a very good relationship. There was kind of no animosity at boardroom level, and obviously we'd done the Ian Rush transfer, and Peter had been very careful to take steps to maintain the contact and the dialogue, so the two clubs were great, but of course we'd never played each other competitively, so you have that kind of balance of emotions, because you're suddenly starting to think, actually, you know what, the competition is becoming now really exciting, and that's the main thing. But at the same time, remembering there is, you know, a tragedy to commemorate, and we're going to have to do that with great care, but clearly without detracting from what's going on the pitch. So, yeah, I think from the moment the draw was made, you're starting to think of that balance and that this is actually going to be a little bit different.
After Liverpool had overcome Olympiacos in a thriller at Anfield to qualify from the groups, the Reds marched past Bayer Leverkusen in the first knockout round, before being pulled out the hat alongside Juventus.
Well, it was the last team wanted to draw, and not because of football terms, although it was daunting enough. You know, it was a good Juve side at the time. But, I mean, it was 20 years from Heysel, and, you know, the significance of it coming up at that point, it was shocking, really. And I particularly wasn't looking forward to going to Turin. But yeah, it brought up a whole lot of emotions that had kind of been sort of repressed, you know, for a long, long time. And I suppose in many ways it made, well, certainly me, but I think there was others, you know, sort of in the fan base, you know, older fellas who, you know, obviously been there, you know, in the mid-80s. It made us take a lot of the history and ourselves and what actually happened in Brussels. And so, in that sense, it was a difficult time.
I remember when it came out, it was more the reaction from people in my dad's generation, which was interesting, because it was almost kind of, they had to take a breath when the clubs were matched. I mean, it was amazing that Liverpool and Juve had never been matched before in the Champions League before that date anyway, and it was always going to happen eventually, but then still when it happens, it's like kind of like when you're expecting something in the post and you know it's coming at some point, it's like, you know. And then it was suddenly, it couldn't be ignored. it can be ignored, something, you know, could Liverpool ignore it? No, they couldn't. Would Juve have to acknowledge the, you know, the game itself at least? Well, yeah, because you can't not play the fixture.
Alongside the fact that tension still lingered from Heysel, Liverpool supporters like the Anfield Rap's Neil Atkinson felt that the Reds had done well just to reach the quarters and that the challenge of facing the Italians might be a step too far.
I didn't want them because of it all. And I still feel that way now, you know, whenever we get deep into European competition. I just think I think what would be good would be for Liverpool to get Juventus in the group stages at some point when it doesn't feel like it's, you know, it's not knockout football, when, you know, adding that bit of emotion onto all the other bits of emotion. So there was definitely an element of that. But it was a little bit different in 05 because every year, every round felt like a bonus. The group, it was our first time back in for a couple of seasons. We hadn't done that well the last time we'd been in. We got knocked out against Bale in the group stages. And so the group was a bit like, right, just get out the group. And then the way we got out the group with Olympiacos, you'd be like, oh, right, okay. And then Leverkusen, there was the memories of the Leverkusen from a few years back, but they went the same side. And we whacked them, to be honest with you. And at the time, you sort of thought, no matter who we get, right, that's going to be it. We're not going to get much more than that. And then getting them with all the stuff that was going to go along with it, and on top of which, the fact that they were the best team in Italy. So it was both the idea of all the stuff, all the kerfuffle that will happen with this, combined with them being absolutely brilliant. They were probably the overseas side I most didn't want to get.
That pessimism from Liverpool was mirrored with optimism from the Juventus perspective.
They came through a group with Bayern Munich and Ajax and didn't lose a game and only conceded one goal, and then they beat Real Madrid in the knockout round previous to the one they got Liverpool. And it almost felt like it was a case of, oh, maybe who are you going to get in the semi-final, without being disrespectful to the Liverpool team that they come up against. It was one of those where you thought, it's difficult, but when you look at what Juve are doing at the minute, this is still a good chance for them to progress.
However, the Liverpool players relished the challenge, including Jamie Carragher, who played 150 times for Liverpool in Europe, a record for the club.
Loved it. I mean, I always loved playing the big teams in Europe. That's what I wanted to be in Europe. I always remember 2001 when we got Barcelona in the semi, and I was the only one who celebrated when the draw got done, because we all watched it together as a team. And I think Alaves, obviously people wanted Alaves in the semi. I'm thinking, I want to play in the new camp. So when Juventus comes out, I'm thinking, yeah, Capello, all these names, Ibrahimovic, Del Piero, Nedved too, I want to play against them. So no, I was always, honestly, I was never worried playing anyone in Europe. I wanted to play them. I wanted to say, when I finished playing, I've played in Juventus, I've played in Barcelona, I've played in Real Madrid, all these great stadiums. So no, I was always very pleased when we got a European giant.
In the build-up to the game, there were attempts by Liverpool supporters to extend an olive branch to the Juventus fans.
So, independent of the club, at the time I run a football team made up of Liverpool fans from around the region. We play other regions, so we go up to Barrow and play Barrow fans. We go to Tranmere, play Tranmere fans. It was like an unofficial mini league. Anyway, one of our lads, say lads, one of the senior members of the team, Nigel, forgive me, I forget his second name. Lovely, intelligent guy. I think he's a lecturer at uni, and he just good football as well. But he just kind of knew everyone. He was just one of these people who everyone liked and everyone had a good word to say about. And he basically said, look, you know, if we're going to have this game, why don't we try and put a game on Stanley Park against, if we can find the team of Juventus fans, whether they're from London or whether we can get them to come in from Turin or whatever. And we started trying to make some contacts, and we made some headway. We made some headway. We then found out as well the club were planning on doing something similar with, I don't know whether it was they were going to elect a fans team or they were going to get a legends team or I don't know. And they were going to get a team of Juventus fans over. And that was all fine. And then a couple of days beforehand, I got a call from someone at the club saying, are you still having this game? I said, well, we're trying to, but we haven't got anything nailed. You know, we haven't got anything nailed. We think we can do it. I said, well, listen, do you want to do it at the academy? I said, well, I thought you. I said, we were, but we're in the same boat as you. But where we were short of numbers, we could help them, and where they were short of numbers. So it kind of made sense. We'd supply a fans team. They had a team of Juventus fans coming up to the academy. And we'd have this game and just see how it went. And to be honest, that's when the gravity kind of hit me. because suddenly it's not just like they're trying to build bridges on a personal fan level. And then suddenly when it's official club event, you're like, oh, shit. I don't mean that in a negative sense. It's like the gravity of it kind of hits on you.
The club also made further attempts to reach out to their Italian counterparts by acknowledging the event of Heysel and paying tribute to those that died.
And we started straight away, literally the next day. And the aim was absolutely to try to strike the right note. And I think the thing that we always tried to do very deliberately was to do things collaboratively with supporters, as opposed to the club just dreaming stuff up and telling them what we were going to do. So straight away we were talking to supporters' representatives and, you know, thinking obviously of a mosaic as being part of it, but also, you know, what else can we do? But we didn't want to go mad. It was more a case of trying to do probably two or three things well, rather than overdo it. Really just try and keep it simple, because otherwise you lose stuff in the clutter. So let's try and be dignified. Let's try to do this well, but just try and do something that, again, it's not going to detract from the event, but at the same time, it will be remembered that we did things the right way. And of course, you never quite know whether you're going to get that balance right or how others are going to react, but you try and stick to your own values and let them guide you.
Perhaps aware that some Juventus supporters would have retribution on their minds, policing around the game in Anfield was tight. Inside the ground, that ill feeling among some of the away section reared its head during the pre-match mosaic.
They were kept in this pub close to the docks, and no one could come into or going outside until it was time to go to Anfield, and they were escorted by buses. And the Liverpool fans, of course, they didn't try to have a fight with them. And the Juventus fans were very kept by the police, so they couldn't avoid and escape. I don't think they were expecting something like this. Maybe if we were expecting something, it would have been something more, we are sorry, it was our responsibility. But I'm not sure. Because, you know, nothing happened in many, many years. Okay, that was the first time that we played against each other. And expecting something where about a very dramatic occasion was maybe hoped. But maybe there was more something like the Juventus fans were not interested in any action made by the Liverpool fans. They turn on their back because they, at the time, they didn't want any kind of relationships with the Liverpool fans.
Commentator Clive Tilsley was covering the game for ITV.
There wasn't a feeling of communion that really spread through the stadium that night. Obviously, everybody was very respectful of those who died 20 years earlier. But you could tell from the reaction of the Juventus fans to one of the two of the things that happened that night, the exchange of those banners, was not greeted with, you know, universal acceptance by the Italians who travelled. And so it was a strange rather than emotional atmosphere. There was an edge. There was definitely an edge about the night. And there was almost a relief, I think, once the football started, because sometimes as a commentator, you deal with almost these stage-managed acts of remembrance, whether it be a Hillsborough anniversary, whether it be a Remembrance Day game or whatever, that for all the genuine feelings that are involved, you kind of know what's going to happen. Everybody is keen to have the opportunity to show and express their feelings. That night, you didn't quite know what was going to happen before the game. You didn't know how everybody inside the stadium was going to react. And so even though Liverpool and Merseyside did everything they could to try to hold out a hand of friendship and try to heal the wounds of 20 years earlier, I can't pretend that it was, you know, the kind of atmosphere. For instance, when Fabio Capello came to Anfield a few years earlier, and Gerard Houllier just come out of hospital, and that memorable night against Roma. There was everybody was kind of singing from the same hymn sheet. I don't think that was the case that night against Juventus.
On the pitch, Liverpool weren't at full strength. Paco Yesterman was Rafa Benitez's assistant manager in 2005.
Yeah, we had some injuries. One of them was, if you remember, was Xabi Alonso just coming back from an injury. Happened 1st of January, you know, in the game against Chelsea. I think in that game, even Didi was missed. I think he was booked the game before and he couldn't play. In this case, was not easy, you know, to fill the gap of these two great players in the middle of the park. And I remember we chose Biscan.
Well, Alonso on the bench was actually a boost because he'd had the broken ankle, and we got to see the footballer he could be before he gets his ankle broken on New Year's Day against Chelsea. And that, so I remember Alonso on the bench being like, oh, Alonso's on the bench, that's good news. Letalac had been sort of mooted, if I remember rightly. This game is a piece with me with the 2-1 against Arsenal. And the reason why is because I remember going to the 2-1 against Arsenal, and he plays Meller up top, and he's got Pongol in the team. And everyone was, I'm not quite sure, everyone thought it would be 4-4-2, and it wasn't. It was Pongol off the flank. And I remember thinking, you know, he's doing something here. And Benitez did have the feeling of someone who was capable of magic, you know, capable of that. We remembered the all the stuff around his Valencia teams, and he was a pure tactician. So there was no, you know, I remember thinking when you get the team and when you're aware of the team, I'm not thinking, oh God, what's he doing? I'm thinking, okay, yeah, let's have a look at this. And that's the difference. Okay, let's see what this looks like. This is interesting. And I'm thinking that more than I'm thinking, oh God, what's he doing? And going, all right, he'll have something in mind for this. And that's then what you see.
The opposition, on the other hand, were at full strength and littered with superstars.
Juve were very close to full strength. Pavel Nedved had just come back after a spell out through injury. They had Nedved, they had Thuram, they had Cannavaro, they had Buffon, they had Ibrahimovic and Del Piero up front, and Trezeguet on the bench. They had Fabio Capello on the bench. He was the man in charge. And Liverpool were, well, all sorts, really. I mean, Dudek and Alonso were on the bench, but weren't fit to be considered, really. Morientes and Pellegrini were at the club and were actually in the league team by then, but were both ineligible. Chris Kirkland was injured, so Scott Carson was playing his third game for the club in goal at the age of 19. Anthony Letelec was making his first start for over a year of injuries and disputes with the club. He was just 20. This was a team that was fifth in the Premier League, a team that would finish fifth in the Premier League. It seemed that only qualified for the group stages of the Champions League, up from the group stages of the Champions League, with the most sensational late goal back in December. It was a team that I think was tired and worn from its run to the League Cup final a month earlier, particularly as that had ended in disappointment in extra time. It was a club that was losing money at the time. Houllier's severance payments had made a big hole in the accounts. David Moores was still the owner, but was ready to sell. Steve Morgan was ready to buy. I mean, really, from day to day, you didn't quite know what was happening to Liverpool Football Club at the time. And in a weird and crazy way, that was reflected by what happened on the field.
While that should have made the away support confident, there perhaps wasn't quite the widespread optimism you'd expect.
We're confident, but there is always this feeling that we are not a Champions League team. While in Italy, we almost always win. I don't know what happens during the Champions League matches. I think it's exactly the opposite when we talk about Liverpool.
Despite the tense atmosphere before things got underway, Liverpool supporters were still determined to seize their big moments.
Yeah, I do remember it was different on the day. On the day itself, I do remember that it wasn't, you know, normally we get party atmospheres. We've had Leverkusen, we've had Olympiacos, and normally it's supporters who are very much coming to come and enjoy Liverpool. And that wasn't there. I remember being around, sort of, I was working in town at the time. So I remember being in the city centre, and I remember it not being as as vibrant as, you know, as it normally is. But I also think that there's something else really, which was that Liverpool was sort of wrapped up in its own bubble, in its own journey a little bit. That's one of my memories of this, was that, you know, this was our first Champions League run since the 2001-02 season. And that, in turn, was our first Champions League run since the ban. You know, we hadn't qualified an awful lot. And so there was, it was a European Cup quarterfinal for Liverpool. And at that point, we had not had many of them. So I think that, you know, we were very much having our own party. There was the idea of the visitors was less important. Liverpool was having its own party because it was at this thing that, as I say, just hadn't had many of. And you never knew, you're looking at a raffle. And that was sort of the thing that was going on through the day, that there wasn't a massive expectation Liverpool would progress over the two legs. But there was a feeling that, you know, this was an opportunity for Liverpool to do something. And yeah, we don't get this. We haven't had this. This is not a thing that happens. Very much remember that being the sort of the vibe, in the same way in which it was in 01-02, in the same way in which it was on the treble season run. You know, it was very much, this is Liverpool getting to be at Europe's top table.
And that feeling of being back in the big time translated into the stands at Anfield.
The atmosphere since we came from the dugout was unbelievable. You know, you could feel probably the two best atmospheres apart of Ataturka, of course, have been involved in. They have been this game and the games, the semi-final against Chelsea. We went into the game, you know, being sure that we should take advantage in this game to go to Turin. It didn't surprise me because since I arrived to Liverpool, I realized that the supporters, they were different.
The atmosphere was unreal. It was absolutely rocking in a way that, you know, it rarely had been, and I'm including the treble run. Even the night when Houllier came back from his illness, the atmosphere was brilliant against Roma, but it was partially because of Houllier, if you see what I mean. Whereas this was just a sheer feral desire to watch Liverpool get stuck into Juventus. And Liverpool starts so fast. And when you call Benitez a pure tactician, like, I think he's played the crowd. So I think he's factored that into his decision-making process. I think Liverpool start this fast because Benitez has seen what this crowd can be like by this point, and he's going to have some of that. That's going to help. And I think that's what you get from him, this absolute desire for his team to put everything on the line in that opening section and then sort of just see where we are come the half-hour mark, come half-time even. Let's just get there and then work out where we are and go from there, because I'd never known an atmosphere like it at that stage, really. It might have been partially where I was. I think I was with Al Sutton, and it might have been that I was in a different place from where I'd been for the treble run and where I'd been for Roma. You know, I used to sit in the paddock, and I wasn't in the paddock, I was higher up. But I'd honestly just, it was breathtaking, the atmosphere against Juventus. Everyone talks about the Chelsea atmosphere, and rightly so, because it was astonishing. But Juventus, it might not even have been behind. You know, if it was far behind, it definitely wasn't far behind. It was Liverpool seizing the day, and it was the start of, I think, the idea. You know, there's always been the great European night stuff, and there's always been, but I think it was a crowd that knew it had to play a role. So I think if you go back to the treble season, we broadly speaking, if I say we expect to win, that makes Liverpool sound more complacent than they were. But if you go to 01-02, you know, we've won the UEFA Cup, we've beaten some big sides, and we're going through the cup run that year in 01-02, and we're a really good side. I think 04-05, you know, you've mentioned the team there. There aren't a load of people knocking around thinking this is a really good side. People aren't stupid, but what they are thinking is, right, we've got a part to play, and then Liverpool give you all the reason to come with them 100% and to will them on.
My father was sitting on the left, close to the away supporter sector, and he told me it was the best atmosphere he has ever had in Anfield. He went to Anfield in the 80s, so probably one of the most remarkable times for Anfield. So he knew the atmosphere, but he told me I couldn't talk with my close mates because I couldn't hear him because of the noise. I think that Anfield is a magnificent place, something that cannot be described. And in that occasion, Liverpool's fans wanted to demonstrate, to share how they care about what happened. And the only way to express this was with this atmosphere that was probably in the most beautiful one.
Benitez and his team rode that momentum created by the noise from the crowd and took the game to Juventus.
Because we knew we were up against it, we had this. There was no illusions that we could match them player for player. So it was always this backs against the wall, and we're just gonna fight and fight and fight and fight. Or that was the thinking of it. It was like, oh, is it gonna be a classic Benitez cagey? We're gonna sit back and try and pick it off. And actually, the opposite was true. We come out and blitz them before they knew where they were. They were 2-0 down.
And Liverpool's first goal of the night came courtesy of Sammy Hupier.
Of course, I remember the first game especially because I scored the first goal, and that was a special moment for me because I think I didn't start the game for a month before this game. So I wanted to show the manager that he should play me more, and to score then the first goal. It was a great moment.
I think that just shows his ability. It wasn't just, sometimes you can hit a great shot and it goes, it flies, and it was a bit lucky. It was like, you really caught it well, sweet volley. I think it was coming around the back post. And he did have two great feet, Sammy Hupier. He was a right-footed player, but he played on the left, centre-back, and he was always composed on his left foot. And I think that we saw that in that goal.
And before the opposition had a chance to respond, they were two down thanks to a screamer from Luis Garcia.
I didn't know that it was going in, but it's so that I felt that I had hit it well. You know, sometimes you hit and you say, oh my God, where is he going to go? But that one, I knew that it was going to go close to the goal. And when I saw the ball going over before, I thought, wow. Again, I couldn't believe it because it's true that I was enjoying, I was having fun. But those goals, they don't come very often.
That strike demonstrated the quality Garcia had, though he didn't always show it, to the frustration of some of his more short-tempered teammates.
Benitez always said a good thing about him, because we used to get frustrated at times and he'd be like, you've got to lay off him, leave him. And his point was, Lewis will do something every 3 or 4 games, something special. And he said, but I don't know what game it is. I don't know what game in after 3 or 4 he's going to do something special. He said, so I can't not play him in the other 3 because I don't know when it's going to come. So you've just got to put up with it, basically. And it was great management, or a clever thing to say, really, that and probably calm me down a little bit, stop shouting around for a couple of weeks, really. But, you know, masterstroke of a signing from Rafa.
Luis Garcia was this type of player that he was capable of the best, and sometimes, you know, get you crazy because he used to lose sometimes so many balls, you know, because he always tried so different things, you know, that was difficult, you know, to come out winning in each one of these tricks he used to try. But and I remember so many times, you know, Carra was so crazy with Luis García, but was this type of player that he could make things that he did against Juventus. And that game, you know, I think make everybody, you know, everybody realized, you know, the type of player we signed.
I think the penny dropped with a lot of us the moment when Luis Garcia hits that shot. It was in before it was in. Do you know what I mean? It was just kind of, it's like you've seen it as he's striking it. And as you mentioned, Buffon, I mean, to beat a keeper of that quality with such a strike, at Anfield erupted. Absolutely went mental. And it was kind of like this delirium, like this is really happening. And I know there's been a sense of that, like this season with certain things, but it was like, bloody hell. And then after that, there was that belief that we could come do it. I mean, even like, and I think that spread through the team as well.
I thought the Garcia goal, and it's celebrated not just because it's an absolutely brilliant goal, but you suddenly think, my God, we can do this. My God, you know, we can do this. And before the game, I was in the queue and I was chatting to someone, this fella who said, you know, just queuing to get in. And I was like, oh, there's some side Juventus. And he went, yeah, but we're all right. We'll be all right here, you know. And I went, well, and he went, you know, I'm doing the thing that, you know, you do. I'm going, well, they've got Neved and they've got Del Piero and they've got Thuram. And he said, yeah, but we'll be all right. We're going to be all right tonight. This is one of ours. And he actually said, 2-1, I think it'll be 2-1. And then he disappears into a puff of smoke like a guardian angel. But there was that sort of, I was thinking this is where this journey ends. And then when the Garcia one hits the net, you suddenly realise, no, we can go through here. And then I think that celebration is a celebration of we can win the Champions League. I think that's the moment where people realise, because if you're in a semi-final, you can get to a final. If you get to a final, anything can happen, as we go on to see. The Garcia goal goes in, and suddenly Liverpool are 2-0 up, and suddenly you think, yes, we can win a Champions League. We're now two ahead. We've got two to hang on to. And yeah, there's a lot of football still to play. And I think there's the celebration, and there's almost like the aftermath of the celebration where the roaring starts again, and everyone's up again. But now there's not just, we need to help these lads out. They've got one hell of a challenge in front of them. Now the atmosphere is, we need to help these lads out because they can win us the Champions League.
The Italians needed to respond, and they started to wrestle back momentum from the Reds.
Actually only served to underline how well Liverpool were doing, because Juventus responded and we started to see why they were so feared prior to the game. They started to take control of the game. Ibrahimovic actually pinged a left-footed shot against the Kop end post a minute after Luis Garcia had scored. Carson made himself big to make a really big save from Del Piero down at that end 10 minutes later. And then Del Piero had a headed goal disallowed for offside. There were a few protests at the time, but when you saw the replays, he looked level. So Rafa's team talk was done for him, really. Two up at the break, great. But with plenty of warnings already served before he even had to open his mouth. And Liverpool had an idea what was to come in the second half. They put an awful lot into the first half hour, and there wasn't a lot left in one or two of the tanks.
And having established a foothold in the game, Juventus took their moment as Fabio Cannavaro's head forced Scott Carson into an error.
There's no way we were going to dominate a team of Juventus's capabilities with the team we had out. It was just impossible. So to make the start we did, there's no way they're not going to come into the game at some stage. And I think when they got that goal, I think you're thinking, just listen, if you can nick something, if we can do something at the other end, fantastic. But it's make sure they don't get another one. You know, we're going there with something, really. But listen, 2-1, I think it was Cannavaro who scored, wasn't it? They're favourites, you know, best team in Italy, the players they had, players who were going to go on and win World Cups, I think a year or so later. So it was all ongoing to Chirena.
But rather than building on their away goal with the momentum they had, Capello's men chose to take a slightly different route.
Whether Fabio Capello, in that Italian football mind of his, felt that, great, we've got the away goal, that's what we really needed here tonight. We've survived the first half hour somehow without any more damage to our hull than we took. He brought Trezeguet on for Del Piero just a couple of minutes before the goal. Whether his Italian mind started to think, if we get anything else tonight, that's a bonus. I'll take this back to Turin. I'll take my chances with that. Maybe he did, because certainly by the end of the night, a 2-1 defeat probably seemed like a decent result.
They do take 2-1. They get to the last 15, 20 and think, you know what? We'll take no chances here. We will just sort of see this one right the way through. We will take 2-1 and go from there. And I think that they do that because they think, yeah, we'll win at our place. We'll do this at our place. These aren't that good a side. And I think that's a perfectly reasonable conclusion for them to draw. What happens, I think, for Juventus at 75 minutes is they think to themselves, we just don't want to lose this any further now. This is fine. We get them back to our place. We win the game. We back ourselves not to concede. You know, again, if you're them, you know, you're a manager like Capello, you're perfectly rational. You've lived the experience of Anfield before, so you've got that in mind. You've been beaten 2-0 at Anfield before, so you've got that in mind as well. But the thing that you're thinking is, well, all right, one's been a set piece, the other one's a 30-yarder. That doesn't happen at our place. And apart from that, have they hurt us? Well, we had done a little bit, but not loads, and not in the second half, not once it had all calmed down. And you're thinking, right, well, they're not going to have home advantage. They're not going to have this. They're not going to be scoring 30 yards. Is that you? It's perfectly rational for Capello to think, we win at our place 1-0, 2-0. Worst case scenario, 2-1, and we might have an extra time to deal with, but we win at our place and we do this. And I think that's quite clearly what Juventus think from sort of 70 minutes onwards. And I'll say again, it was the right thing to do. It's just that Liverpool are brilliant in the second leg.
Once the first leg result was confirmed, the focus from the players switched to the second leg in Turin. But there wasn't complacency that the job was done.
They're favourites. You know, best team in Italy. So it was all ongoing to Turin. I always remember Stevie was injured a lot through that season, and we were worried about missing out on the Champions League for the next season, getting top four with Everton. And Stevie was touch and go for that game. And I said, if you go there and you pull your hamstring, you'll be out for the season. I said, we'll have no chance of catching Everton. I said, if it was me, I'd just leave it. Because I still felt, even with Stevie in the team, this is a game where, you know, you lose 1-0, you're out type of thing. It's going to be tough. And it was actually Alonso's first game back after a long injury.
But despite the trepidation ahead of the second leg, to win in that manner at Anfield felt like a big moment, not least for Rafa Benitez and his staff.
And that game, I think, was the turning point that we really, at least myself and the ones I was close by, we started believing that we could go all the way to the final. I think it's one of the games that, apart from Ataturk, I remind, like, you know, like a turning point, you know, like the game that gave everybody, you know, the right to believe that something that was a dream at the beginning, especially with a team like, you know, we were building again, you know, and was not doing so well on the Premier League, I think was probably the game of that season, apart from the final.
It's a strange one. Had we gone in as favourites and won 2-1 and conceded the away goal, you might automatically shift to, oh no, we could have done better there. But I think the fact that we blew them away in such a fashion, there was confidence coming up, there was an awareness that they got the away goal. But then I think there was also this thing that Liverpool fans do sometimes, and I love it, where, you know, the outward projection is that they're invincible. When internally you might be going, oh, fucking hell, but you want everyone else to see, you make your chest out, you're swaggering. The immediate reaction after the game was to go out and have a good time. And we had a good night that night. We had a really good night that night. It felt like something. And you could see there was a togetherness between, I mean, obviously, you know, everyone adored Rafa as well. And it felt like there was a link with the team now, similar to what there is. Then, similar to what there is now under Jürgen, maybe we did lose for a couple of seasons. And then I said, literally before the ink was even dry on the next day's papers, Juve were already talking about what they're going to do. And they said the Dualpi, you know, and how Liverpool were lucky and how it was abhorrent what had happened. And that just fueled Liverpool's determination.
I just, the main thing it did for me, the main thing that the Juventus quarterfinal did for me was make me even more certain that Rafa Benitez was the right man to manage Liverpool. And it made me even more certain that he would find a way through what was still, where he still had so many problems to solve, but that he was in the process of solving the problems that were there right now, and he would go on and solve future problems. I didn't think that the result sort of, you know, I think it was a result that pinned the continent back by its ears. But the reason why is because they'll have felt as though it's a plucky Liverpool performance where they've snatched one and you've seen the power of Anfield. I don't think the continent will have gone, Liverpool are back. And I actually don't think it's true that Liverpool are back until they win the final.
Given the unlikely lineup that started the game for Liverpool, it was two of the usual suspects who stood out.
The heroes of the quarterfinal, for me, were Sammy Hupia and Jamie Carragher. I don't know how many different centre-back partners each had during their time at Liverpool. I hate to think how many they had who they didn't trust, but Sammy and Jamie clearly trusted one another faithfully, and it showed. Sammy had a good partnership with Stefan Onshow, obviously, before that. Daniel Agger came to the club, and I think was a good servant for Liverpool. But Hupia and Carragher was proper foundation for any team. They were fantastic together all the way through that Champions League campaign. They needed to be at times, and they certainly needed to be in the second half of that first leg because one or two Liverpool players were out on their feet in the closing quarter of the game.
The match, of course, had more riding on it than just the result for both clubs. And Liverpool continue to try and repair the relationship off the pitch.
Clearly the focus is on what happened in Liverpool, but it's also, for me, one of the memories is the dialogue we had with Otello Laurentini, who'd form a sort of families group in Juve. And we had meetings with him at the away leg. And, you know, what a really an incredibly nice, humble guy he was. He'd lost his son, who was a doctor. He'd actually gone back in to the crush at Heysel to treat people and then got killed, which was a pretty horrifying story. And so Otello had brought up his grandson. And that was, you know, that was a difficult, that was a kind of poignant moment to be talking with him and meeting with him and working out with Juventus what we could actually do for the families, because the clubs had never done anything sort of jointly in Italy. And in the end, we took the youth team to Arezzo, which was the Laurentini's village. We went there in September. And, you know, for obvious reasons, it's a visit you wished you would never have had to make because of the circumstances. But actually, it's also one of the days that does stand out in my memories of Liverpool, because I said, what delightful people. And, you know, I think that although it wasn't the first team, but it was just the two youth teams of the clubs, it was really special to be involved in that, because you felt again that was something that was really making an impact to those people and helping them to achieve a closure.
Ensuring the relationship between certain sections of Juventus fans and Liverpool remains a complicated one.
When there are the draws in August, I always ask my father if he would like to play against Liverpool, and he always answers me he would prefer not, because we're not yet ready to become friends. So I think that it would be very, very appreciated and helpful to have kind of contact with the main supporters, the main most important in the club and the Curva Sud leaders, in order to try to talk about what happened, the responsibilities, and all what happened. I think the most difficult people to convince are those who were at Heysel's, and the familiars and the parents of the death. I think they are the most difficult people to convince. But there are also the younger people, the new generations. I think they are more open to a possible friendship. And I know some of those who were at Heysel. And sometimes I talk about this, they think that they would never talk to a Liverpool fan ever. But something is quite changing. So I think that this could be a good moment to try to become closer.
But for some Liverpool fans, being forced to reflect on what had happened at Heysel proved to be a cathartic experience.
I think it was, I'm glad that, because we have to draw Juventus sometime, and we have to face that, a feeling that, the sense of what had happened, the sense of what we'd done, what we were part of, and how things have changed. So I'm glad it's happened then. I mean, to win was more than you know, we expected, and so that was fantastic. And perhaps it's been the next time we played them, then maybe extending the hands of friendship, there'll be more acceptance, because we've been to this, and that's nice too.
The Reds, of course, went on to be crowned champions of Europe for a fifth time. And for those who followed the run to Istanbul on ITV, they'll always remember the man who narrated that particular journey.
And the drama in the games, obviously from the closing minutes of the Olympiacos match, which belonged very much to Andy Gray. That was a game that was live on Sky. I didn't even go to that match. I remember watching it at home. Through this night to the ghost goal, I was commentating alongside Andy Townsend, as indeed I was for the Juventus game at Anfield. I remember after the semi-final how angry he was that we didn't have a camera which cleared up once and for all whether the Liverpool winner against Chelsea had actually crossed the line, and it was all to do with the fact that there wasn't a position at Anfield at that time on the goal line where you could put a camera without kicking out about 40 season ticket holders. So that just wasn't possible. And then through to the final and, you know, hello, hello. And, you know, all those wonderful moments in those seven extraordinary minutes in Istanbul. Yeah, they're all memories. And I'm only tiny part of people's memories of those occasions. Era, people can look back and find the commentaries and probably listen to things that I said at the time, which they didn't even hear on the night because they were too busy jumping around their living room and hugging each other or in a pub or whatever. So it's nice to have a little tiny part in it. It's nice when people remember things that were said, but it was Luis Garcia who volleyed the goal, and I just reacted to it.
Tall Moments in Time was narrated by me, John Gibbons, interviewing by myself and Josh Sexton, with editing and production by Josh and Andy Heaton. Remember, if you like what we do and you'd like to hear more, go to theanfieldrap.com/subscribe or download the Anfield Rap app. Sports Social Podcast Network.